From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, psychic abilities. Here's what's happening. Available evidence does not indicate a need for COVID-19 vaccine booster shots among the general population. This according to an international group of scientists, including two senior FDA officials reportedly stepping down from their posts over a disagreement with the White House on the administration of booster shots. Marion Gruber, the director of the FDA's Office of Vaccines Research and Review, and her deputy director, Phil Krause, said they plan to leave in October and November. The Consumer Brands Association, a trade group representing dozens of major companies, has urged the Biden administration to immediately provide clarification on how to implement a sweeping private sector vaccine mandate. The letter to President Biden included a list of more than 50 questions from its member companies regarding requirements for vaccination, testing, and other operational concerns. The group's members include Coca-Cola, General Mills, and the Pepsi Company. A physically active lifestyle was associated with a 62% lower risk of anxiety disorder diagnosis among men and women in a study with the largest population size to date. So do some exercising. Apple has updated its software for iPhones to address a critical vulnerability that independent researchers say has been exploited by notorious surveillance software to spy on a Saudi activist. The urgent update that Apple released on Monday plugs a hole in the iMessage software that allowed hackers to infiltrate a user's phone without the user clicking on any links. So make sure you download that. Facebook had a problem on its hands. People were making posts that got caught in the company's automated moderation system or were taken down by its human moderators. The problem wasn't that the moderators, human or otherwise, were wrong to take down the posts. The problem was that the people behind the posts were famous or noteworthy, and the company didn't want a PR mess on its hands. So Facebook came up with a program called X-Check or Cross-Check, in which many instances became a de facto list. Over the years, X-Check has allowed celebrities, politicians, athletes, activists, journalists, and even the owners of animal influencers to post whatever they want with few or no consequences for violating the company's rules. What's this all mean? Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, what is this?
Yeah, well, what we're talking about here, of course, is social media terms of service enforcement, and that covers a wide range, everything from porn to hate speech, misinformation, fraud, phishing attacks, all kinds of things. And I'm on record as saying I really would prefer governments stay out of this. And a key reason is obvious, especially when it comes to hate speech and misinformation. If every state and national government and other jurisdictions are able to make their own rules about content on national and multinational platforms, it's going to be chaos. You have Brazil saying you can't take down this. You have Europe saying you have to take this down faster. You have Texas and Florida trying to pass their own content laws that are unlikely to pass constitutional muster. You can see the problem. And when governments are involved, their content policies could change drastically every time a new administration is voted in with a different political philosophy. It's a train wreck. So I do feel it's better for these firms to make these decisions themselves, but there are important requirements, and those are that the decision-making processes be as transparent as is practical and that those rules are applied in an even-handed manner. And this is where the reported Facebook secret X-Check program enters the picture. It apparently classified a category of VIP users, and you listed some of the categories, and we're seemingly talking about almost 6 million of them in 2020, which seems like a big number, but it's not on a percentage basis for Facebook. And these users were supposedly relatively immune from enforcement actions for posts that ordinary users would have been penalized or thrown off the platform for making. Now, there didn't seem to be any political bias. Those VIPs included people of both parties, wide variety of professions, and apparently the theory was, as you suggested, that the routine enforcement actions against these users could trigger blowback from their followers and create bad PR for Facebook. Now, there was supposed to be a system for following up on these exceptions, but it seems from the internal documents that came out that this never happened much of the time. So this is yet another black eye for Facebook. And it emphasizes how important it is that when it comes to these social media policies, that they need to be logical and fair, but that they're also applied in a logical and fair manner. Otherwise, we could end up with politicians with conflicting points of view running the show with their own agendas from all over the world. And as far as I'm concerned, that would be highly problematic, to say the least.
I agree. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. The former director of a secretive U.S. government UFO program is ready to tell his full story. Luis Elizondo, you know that name, who headed the Pentagon's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program's effort to study UFOs around the world, has signed a book deal with William Morrow, an imprint of HarperCollins, after a competitive bidding war for the U.S. publishing rights. The memoir promises to reveal shocking, never-before-shared details regarding what Elizondo had learned about UFOs and the profound implications for humanity, all of which will escalate what is already a very hot topic globally. We'll get him on the program when his book is ready. SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, is set to launch four people into space Wednesday on a three-day mission that is the first to orbit the Earth with exclusively private citizens on board. With more, here's Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hi, Stephen.
Hello there, George. We begin with astronomy and rapidly a strange variable radio source from the Milky Way's nucleus. This is in the news. A new and strange type of variable radio signal now has been detected coming from our galactic center. And, George, unlike fast radio bursts or pulsars, this new radio signal has been detected only 13 times, and that by a sophisticated radio telescope in Australia. And astronomers tried this experiment. They tried to check the signal with other telescopes in the X-ray and infrared regions, and simply, the signal was no longer there. So what could this be? Speculation is one possibility is that these variable signals could be coming from a new class of celestial objects known as, get a load of this, galactic center radio transients. Those are radio sources which brighten and then disappear magically for a while, but these never have any X-ray emissions. Very strange. The object has an even stranger catalog ID, get a load of this. It's known officially in the astronomy world as ASKAP. J173608.2-321635. You know what, George? That's longer than a VIN number on most automobiles.
That's right.
So stay tuned. This is an exciting story. And as you mentioned before, Inspiration 4, a little bit more details. The first SpaceX all-civilian Earth orbital flight will now look at a launch date some 24 hours later than the first scheduled date. Latest launch window is scheduled for Wednesday the 15th, starting at around 8.02 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And that's due to some weather concerns and other technical issues on board the spacecraft. But what's interesting, George, is that this launch will go up the east coast of the United States. So many coast listeners, if you're out there during this launch window, it could be a period of a few, maybe 4 hours. It's set to go into orbital inclination, that is, an orbit of about 51.6 degrees. But the four-person crew is fit and ready, as we've talked about, to orbit the Earth in this Crew Dragon spacecraft known as Resilience. And this particular Resilience will be placed into an orbit higher than the International Space Station. Lucky them. We wrap it up with the live sky, things that people can see and they love. Mid-September, George, brings us to a more defined moon, as the moon has just passed its perigee, its closest point to us this month, and a first-quarter moon looms in the sky into early Tuesday morning. Planets, Mercury is now at its best on Tuesday evening at an elongation low in the west-northwest at sunset by about 27 degrees. Binoculars will help. Venus is the unmistakable goddess of love and beauty just to the left of Mercury. And then the moon moves close to Saturn on the 17th and Jupiter on the 18th. And finally, the planet Neptune comes to opposition on the 14th. It's a faint telescopic object. But get a load of this. It's 2.687 billion miles away. And if you and I and the audience could jump on a light beam, it would only take us a mere 4.5 hours, even by light speed. For more information, we always go to theskylive.com. Emails, we love them. DrSkyShow@gmail.com. The understatement of the century, always keep your eyes to the skies. And I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens.
Dr. Sky, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Since COVID has begun to fester, are we losing our rights, having to wear masks, being mandated to take vaccinations, and more restrictions? In a moment, attorney Jonathan Emore joins us. We'll talk about that next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Jonathan Emord with us has been practicing constitutional and administrative law before the federal courts and agencies since 1985, having begun his career as an attorney in the Federal Communications Commission during the administration of President Ronald Reagan. Jonathan has maintained an abiding conviction to achieve full First Amendment protection for the freedoms of speech and press for all of us. He was last on with me in April as we unveiled his book, The Authoritarians, and that thing took off on Amazon, didn't it?
George, your program is like a rocket ship for that book. I just can't believe it. I was on your show, and the book just sold like crazy, and the publisher was grinning from ear to ear. I have to tell you, it's amazing, your reach, your audience, and it's a platform that is probably the greatest in the world for communicating information to people. It's amazing, George.
Well, and you deserved it. It's a great book, and it's so poignant as what we're going to talk about tonight, Jonathan. They're talking about mandates possibly for vaccinations on airplanes. The president last week has recommended forcefully to companies with more than 100 people to have everyone vaccinated. Are these legal? Can you do that?
Well, these new policy recommendations that he has, actually his mandate, is fraught with all sorts of constitutional and federal legal problems. So what he's trying to do, apparently, is to institute through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration a thing called an emergency temporary standard, which is a 60-day mandate that goes through without a rulemaking under Section 6C of the OSHA Act. And what this thing is supposed to do, it's supposed to be a very rare, rarely used vehicle. But this administration and others have used it enough so that the courts have struck it down about four out of the six times it's been recently used. So it's not a very popular vehicle with the courts, and that's because it has two requirements that have to be met under the statute. The first is that employees have to be shown to have been exposed to a grave danger, that is, each specific employee. And second, that there is that the measure that the government is implementing is, quote, necessary to protect employees from that danger. And in this instance, you know, you have the president mandating that over 100 million people who are employed all be vaccinated or tested weekly. And there are real problems with this because a lot of them are not in grave danger. For example, those telecommuting, those who work outside, those who already have natural immunity, yet they are all apparently brought within the compass of this thing. Not to mention those who have religious objections, and under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, they would be protected from this mandate, and those who are immune-compromised or otherwise vulnerable to adverse effects associated with the vaccine, particularly vulnerable, and they would be protected under the under Title I of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And those are just a few of the examples of problems that arise. Take a look, for example, of states. What if he attempts to employ this mandate on the states themselves, mm-hmm. that is, their employees? That violates the basic tenets of federalism. There is no power in the federal government to control the states this way. Under the 10th Amendment, there's a thing called the anti-commandeering doctrine, which stands in the way of Biden on that. When you look at what Biden's doing, he's assuming dictatorial powers here. He's legislating, and he's not going to Congress asking for a law to be passed. Instead, he's just imposing his will as Dr. Biden on all of his patients, the entire country, and he's insisting on it despite its violation of a thing called the separation of powers and the non-delegation doctrine. He has no power to make law under Article 2 of the Constitution. He can implement the law, but he can't make it. And repeatedly, as in the case of the rent cessation and the border policy, the Remain in Mexico policy, and so forth, he's acted not by going to Congress, but unilaterally. And that's where he's gotten into trouble with the courts. But he seems not to learn from those experiences, and instead he's doing it all over again here. So as he proceeds, he's taking away our liberties. And people say, well, how can you have liberties when you're talking about a freedom to do something that might make you ill? But that's not the point. The point is that under our constitutional system and under any system that respects individual liberty, we leave it to the person to decide what's in their own best interest.
That's right.
And we regard that choice as one that is legally protected, because the government is basically instituted among us for the purpose of protecting our rights. And whenever it turns against us, as the Declaration teaches, well, that's the time for trouble. That's the time for revolution.
So this is not a slam dunk that these mandates are going to happen.
It is not a slam dunk. They will happen. That is to say, he will promulgate an emergency temporary standard through OSHA. But will it survive? It's likely to be inundated with suits across the country. I would imagine that dozens, if not hundreds, of lawsuits will be filed against the administration the very day this rule is promulgated. And I think that the administration is going to drown in a sea of litigation. I think it will be an extraordinarily costly and lengthy process as these things wind their way through the federal courts, with conflicting judgments made in different courts across the country, ultimately decided by the Supreme Court. But one thing's for certain, George. This is not going to change one iota the trajectory of this disease in our country.
Right.
Not at all. It's going to divide us. It's going to pit the vaccinated against the unvaccinated. It's going to encumber enterprise. It's going to hurt the economy. It's going to result in increased unemployment. It's going to disrupt business. And it's going to harm individuals who are terminated from their jobs and are otherwise adversely affected by this. All of it is unnecessary, because in the end, it will have no effect whatsoever on the trajectory of this. Not only that, it's a highly politicized move, George. And the reason why I say that is, right off the bat, as he was speaking it to the public, he had already exempted the entire United States Post Office employees, all illegal immigrants into the country, the Congress and its staff, the White House and its staff, the federal courts and their staffs, all are exempt from this mandate.
Why?
Why did he do that?
Yeah.
Because this is deep in insincerity, George. As I mentioned, this isn't going to change the trajectory of this one iota. The reason why I think he did this, I think he needed to pivot from the Afghanistan disaster. I think the administration was under so much heat from the public, with people's disgust.
Well, he said back in December of 2020 he would never mandate vaccinations.
Right. He said exactly the contrary. In fact, that was their official position. And I think he got in hot water with this. There's a supermajority of Democrats who support a mandate, and I think he needed to appeal to his base, because they were really, a good number of Democrats were disgusted with his Afghanistan withdrawal, how he did it. And I think he did this as a move to gain political favor with his base, to try to shore up his base. He did it in a most unfortunate way, however. I mean, even if he wanted to strongly encourage people to be vaccinated, the answer is simple. Don't treat people like they're ignorant. Educate them. Give them information. And explain to them your position.
And fair information, too.
Encourage them to talk to their doctors.
This is what I don't get, Jonathan. COVID is up apparently 300% from a year ago, yet nearly everyone is masked. Two-thirds of the country apparently is vaccinated. How can it be up 300%? It's crazy.
Exactly. It is crazy. Here's what we're learning, George. We're learning that the vaccine is really a therapeutic. We're learning that about 4 months after it's administered, and during that period of time, that it wanes in its effectiveness. And that will the rate with which it wanes will vary person to person. And we're also learning that therapeutics like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are extraordinarily effective in treating it. We're also learning that natural immunity is the best of all. The Israeli study shows us it's 13 times more effective than the vaccine itself in immune protection.
Hold on for a second, Jonathan. We're at a break. We'll come back and talk more. I want to get into what other nations are doing with anything like this, and we'll take calls with you next hour. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jonathan Emore. Jonathan, are there other countries that apparently are this restrictive or possibly could be that restrictive?
Yes, there are many other countries, but ones that are most restrictive are interesting because they really have established authoritarian states that are ruining their people's lives and causing great problems with depression, suicide, and so forth. It's the wrong direction. But let me just say from the outset, worldwide, just take a look at the overall numbers. It tells us something important. Worldwide, there have been 219 million reported cases and 4.55 million deaths. Now, that's out of a global population of 7.9 billion. In other words, the reported cases, that is, those significant enough to send someone to the hospital, represent about 3% of the world's population. So as pandemics go, this is a real horror, but it's 3%. So most of the cases that exist are asymptomatic, most likely. And the reinfection rate when people get this is very low. The Dutch BNO News Service, for example, puts it at 240 cases of reinfection worldwide. Less than a fraction of a percent is the reinfection rate. And when we talk about lockdowns, get a load of this. Eritrea, which has 6,665 total cases, 40 deaths, and a population of 3.2 million, this is what they've done. They've closed all public transportation, all cars, and all other means of transport are prohibited without a permit. All schools are closed. No one is allowed to leave a village or a city without a permit. All but businesses must be closed at 8 p.m., and only essential trades are allowed to open. Newspapers have ceased to operate, and the borders are closed. In other words, they've imprisoned their entire population. Then when we come to Australia, which is, you know, closest to our Western values, you would think, there are 75,324 total cases, 1,098 deaths. By the way, the median age of death worldwide is very old. It's in the high 70s to 80s. In Australia, it's 86.
Wow.
The total population of Australia is 26 million. So the incidence of cases that are reported in Australia is 0.3% of the people, of the population of Australia.
Why are they shutting it down?
Pardon me?
Why are they shutting the country down?
It's insane. This is a power grab. It's a perfect opportunity. It's the old adage from Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste. People who want it, you know, there are two ways of doing this. People don't hear the other side. They only hear the way of authoritarianism, taking away your rights. But there's another way to deal with this, and that is to give as much information as possible to the people, to allow them to decide for themselves, to encourage development of therapeutics. I mean, we learned that the vaccine isn't a panacea. Well, why then are we just hammering away at everyone getting vaccinated, at boosters being used, at just this constant vaccine, vaccine, vaccine? There are alternatives, and there's very good evidence for them. Ivermectin is extraordinary in its effectiveness. Hydroxychloroquine is extraordinary. There's immunoglobulin therapy.
If it's administered for the ivermectin by a doctor. I don't think people should be running to your livestock store, getting the ivermectin dewormer and using it without a doctor telling you.
You shouldn't be dissuaded by the federal government from using against a disease that can ravage people and kill them. should not be handcuffed by the government in avoiding prescription of therapeutics that might work or that do work. They should have, there should be a free flow of communication with patients. They should be in command of their own health. They should be encouraged to understand the good and the bad of all of this. The government wants us only to hear one message, which is vaccines work. They're harmless. Go get them. Well, that's not true. That's not true. The vaccines do work, but they're not forever. And in addition, the adverse effects of these vaccines are higher than the adverse effects of all vaccines combined.
I got an email tonight from a guy who was watching his neighbors. They got the booster shot administered by a nurse who came to their house, and he said that was yesterday. Today, they both were carted out in an ambulance, taken to the hospital. He knows not why.
Yeah, there are all sorts of things happening. And in England, for example, they have stopped the administration of the vaccine in young people. They found the incidence of heart-related ailments excessive. They found the incidence of clotting and so forth unacceptably high risks. We don't hear that. We don't hear about the risks associated with it. Why isn't the government hunting down all the adverse events, trying diligently to find out what they are, what the causative factors are, what aspects of human biology are interacting adversely with this vaccine, and asking us to remove from the vaccine pool those who are at high risk? Why isn't there this diligent effort? We have the highest incidence of adverse events associated with this vaccine, higher than every other vaccine combined. In addition, the adverse event reports through the VAERS system represent something like 1% of all adverse events. So it's a fraction. That means that we have tens of thousands of people suffering adverse events from the vaccine. Well, I'm not saying to people they shouldn't have a right to be vaccinated.
That's their choice.
It's their choice. I'm in favor of individual freedom of choice. I'm in favor of the free flow of information. That's what our First Amendment stands for. That's what our Constitution stands for. But as I explain in my book, The Authoritarians, we've had this authoritarian movement. We've had in the bureaucracy growing for over 100 years these people who have advocated control over the American population in order to pursue what they consider to be in our best interests. It's like what the president did in his speech in microcosm. He got up there. He has this bias. He hates those who don't vaccinate. He thinks everybody's an idiot if they don't vaccinate, and he's insisting that they be vaccinated. Well, he's not a medical authority. He certainly is in trouble when it comes to spatial and temporal awareness issues, and he shouldn't be in the position of substituting himself for your physician. He shouldn't be in the position of substituting himself for your freedom of choice. You live your life every day with risks. You make choices about how to reduce those risks. How is this any different? It really isn't. As we're talking about it, you know, look at the number of people who are dying. It's horrible. Some people have this, and it's extremely ravaging. But it's a very small percentage of the overall population, and it largely affects the elderly. Why aren't we focused on reducing the risks of the elderly? Why are we masking kids in school? There's no evidence for that. Why are we closing schools? Why are we maintaining this virtual education environment, which is very fraught with little likelihood of success from the get-go? Why are we doing that to kids?
And here's something that's confusing, Jonathan. For every handful of doctors you have who are for the vaccine, you've got a handful of them who are against it. There's no middle ground here. How come?
Because in an environment where you suppress the free flow of information and don't allow debate, you know, we have a big tech environment that censors every time someone dissents from the view that a vaccine is a good thing. Bingo, they're off the internet.
Right.
Well, we can't, and the government's certainly not encouraging debate, right? What we ought to have is a free flow of information and an open debate. And this is how you innovate. And this is how you come to consensus. You can never reach a consensus if you won't allow that debate to happen and the public to participate in it and testing to be done and a full panoply of options to be considered. It looks like the best way to deal with this is a therapeutic approach. It looks like we need to have that as the backbone so that when people who, you know, people who are vaccinated are having breakthrough infections, and some of them are being hospitalized, and then there are people who aren't vaccinated who are getting sick. You have this lie propagated by the federal government that this is a disease only of the unvaccinated. Well, that's not true.
And they want the vaccinated to wear masks. The other thing is they want vaccinated people to wear the mask. That tells me it doesn't work that much.
Right, that's exactly right. On the one hand, they're telling you, oh, the vaccine is the solution. On the other hand, they're telling you, well, if you're vaccinated, you've got to be careful because you might get something. I mean, the vice president just said something yesterday, which was, we have to protect the vaccinated. What do you mean you have to protect the vaccinated? You've been telling us that once you get to the vaccine, you're done. The president just ordered 100 million people in the workforce to be vaccinated. If the vaccine isn't the answer, why are you going to disrupt the entire economy and cause people to lose jobs and ruin their lives? Why are you going to do that in order to insist on vaccination if vaccination isn't the answer? Well, the reason is the answer is multifaceted. It's therapeutics, it's vaccines, and each person is different, and they need to go in and talk to their physician. I mean, each person has a different health profile. We shouldn't be treating everybody with a one-size-fits-all approach, and we ought to recognize that each person needs a tailored approach. This is a problem. It has solutions. It's not a boogeyman. It's not a horror story. It's a virus. We shouldn't give up our rights for a virus. You mean to tell me we're going to allow a virus to defeat the United States? We've been defending liberty in the most heinous circumstances around the world and at home since our founding. Are we going to allow government to use the excuse of a virus to take away all of our civil liberties?
As a constitutional lawyer, how would you handle this situation if somebody approached you and said, I want you to fight this? Do it.
Well, I think we have to sue the government. I believe there are going to be many, many suits following this emergency temporary.
Will there be like stays?
Yes. There will be declaratory judgment actions and injunctive relief actions to block the imposition of this. And they're going to be coming right and left because this is a dumb thing. When you tell 100 million people without regard to their medical history, without regard to their workplace environment, without regard to their options, that they must be vaccinated or must be tested every week, as we know, I mean, a lot of these people work from home right now.
That's right. They're by themselves.
How are they a threat?
Exactly. I mean, does the mandate hold up for people who may work for a big company, but they work by themselves in their house?
Yes.
Still?
We don't have the actual order yet, but the administration has made very clear that they want as many of these 100 million people compelled as possible. And so when you have people, they don't accept working from home as an excuse, which is ridiculous. Because there's no workplace hazard. There's no grave danger to the workplace or to other employees if someone's alone in their house working on a computer. In addition, what about people working outside? I mean, a whole bunch of people are working outside who fall under this category. And then what about all those people who already have natural immunity? I mean, this administration is blind to natural immunity. You ask Dr. Fauci about natural immunity, he looks dumbfounded. Of course he knows about natural immunity. There's so many studies on natural immunity, it's not even funny. The latest studies, the most advanced studies done in Israel, show that natural immunity affords a person 13 times the level of immune protection.
I had that story last week. Exactly. A natural immunized person is much stronger to fight this than somebody who even gets a vaccine.
And here's the thing. For the vaccinated people, yeah, that was worthwhile getting vaccinated for a lot of people. A lot of people who are injured don't think so. But the ones who weren't injured or made it through, they now have some immunity. Well, here's the story. They're lying to you about the Delta variant, too, because almost all of the people who are vaccinated who get the Delta variant may have mild symptoms or more significant symptoms, but a very few of those are going to be hospitalized. And here's the real story about this. Sooner or later, we're all going to have to experience this coronavirus as we have every other coronavirus that circulates the world.
If we haven't already, Jonathan, I think all of us have been exposed somehow.
It may well be. And here's the thing, George. That is not such a bad thing after all. And why? Because of this fulsome immunity. Everybody who gets this thing ends up either dead or has a fulsome immunity. The bad story is the first year of this. The good story is that over time, and if you talk to immunologists like I do, they all say, Jonathan, a year from now, this thing is going to be far less virulent than it is now. At the start of a new virus, it's virulent and it kills people. And as it goes through the world, it ends up becoming less virulent because that's the only way it can propagate itself. That's the only way it can remain. It can't kill its host forever. And so you end up with a less virulent virus anyway. Our effort ought to be focused on the realistic idea of protecting people and treating them as best we can, but allowing people with their own doctors to decide what treatment is best for them, not dictating from Washington, D.C. a one-size-fits-all mandate that everybody get vaccinated. If Joe Biden had his way, if he had the ability to stretch through some permutation of argument, argument that every single person from the day they were born to the day they died was vaccinated, I'm sure he would insist upon it. But that is not the answer. That is ridiculous. That will cause far more injury than it will help people. Remember, we've got a percentage of the population in worldwide, 3% incidence of this disease. Well, let's focus on the reality. Get rid of the histrionics. Let's focus on dealing with that. And when it comes to this ever-present argument, hospitals are overrun. That's simply not true. But in instances where hospitals reach near full capacity in one small area, that's not the characteristic across the country. And we can deal with that.
Hold on, Jonathan. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back. We'll chat more and open up the phone lines for you.